Hello everyone and welcome to Jazz Exploration, the podcast about jazz and improvised music. For this new episode, I have the privilege and pleasure of talking to Pritesh Walia, Sharik Hassan and Avril Logan, the members of PSA Trio, a new trio fusing organ grooves and soulful beats. It is just after that. Hello, guys. So around the table, we have Pritesh Walia, Sharik Hassan, and Avril Logan. So you are all part of a new trio called PSA Trio, which are based on your first name, basically. And you are just releasing an album now. Yeah, smart, right?
Yes.
So we are just releasing an album. So before going deeper into the subject, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and how the whole PSA Trio adventure started?
Certainly. Well, we all met in Boston. Pritesh, guitar; Shark, keyboards; myself on the drums. Pritesh and I were both in school at the New England Conservatory, although I think we met a little bit before that. And so we were doing lots of gigs around the city, ensembles at school and things of that nature. And then Shark came back to town, as I recall, and we met on a wedding gig of all things. And I think, Pritesh, you have a cool story about how y'all connected, right?
Yeah. I mean, the same thing with Avery is like the powerhouse of a drummer in Boston. Everyone keeps saying it, but everyone wants to have him in his band. So whenever I could, I would try and get all of any opportunity that I could get him in to in my shows. And I would have I used to have a bunch of like octet bands that I used to write for. And he used to play for all of them, and as much as I could get him for, as much as he could give time for, because I know he was playing at 300 gigs a day. So
this is coming from Pritesh. If you knew Pritesh's work ethic, I mean,
and Sharik, on the other hand, you know, being from India, we're both kind of being from India. I've had a lot of friends kind of like talk about him or be like, oh, you should, since he's in New York, or at that point you were just in New York, Sharik, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friends would be like, you should connect and make it possible. And then he started teaching at Berkeley, and I used to host a jam session at a place called the Bebop. How funny. But I just found him passing by some one day, and I was like, hey, why don't you come in and play a few tunes? And we did, and then we grabbed a beer, and then immediately kind of connected on a lot of different aspects, you know. And I think rest is kind of history, because I feel like if you initially don't have if you're in Boston, New York, everyone can play music, you know. But if you initially just don't have a friendship or an understanding together as musicians, then I don't think there's a next step. But so in this case, in both directions, with Avery and with Sharik, I think it connected really well. And once we all were put in the room together, it worked even better. So it was just a matter of putting us all together, and it kind of all clicked, you know. It was funny when I put them both in the same room, because they were like, oh, I think I played with you at a wedding gig. And I was like, oh, great. This is not a
classic, you know, Boston.
This is all, yeah.
Yeah, so it all started as a friendship, and then you went on to playing together, and not the other way around.
But we all know that we can play. You know, that's kind of the thing. It's that's always there. I mean, I asked Sharik to come play, and immediately on a playing level we connected too. And with Avery, same thing. I mean, there's a reason this guy plays a million gigs a second, you know, because he understands music at a deeper level and stuff. So, and he's good work ethic to work with, you know. So with all that given together, and you put the idea that, hey, I can sit down and grab a beer with this friend and talk about music. Oh, that's the best combination, you know, in my opinion, as musicians. So it was just a matter of putting us in one room, and then it all just kind of happened.
Started in Boston because you all met, as I understand, over there. But now you've all like moved like away from one direction to another. So how do you manage to keep the project going with all your like life going in different direction?
We have to plan it a lot more now because it's not like, as I happen to be passing, you know, that we're like always in the same neighborhood. But so one thing is that we're, you know, always collaborating. We're always talking, you know, every day, and sending each other ideas, sending recordings back and forth, you know, and listening. Like, so the last thing we did was a recording in Boston, and we've been kind of working on that. We finished that recording, but we were still going back and forth and adding to it. And now the next things that we're doing is we're planning concerts. So like Avery and I will go to LA and in order for us to play some shows there, and also to be able to rehearse, to practice, record some new music together. Also Prithesh is coming to the East Coast, where we will spend a few days. So, you know, we're going to continue. It just requires that kind of commitment of being willing to travel.
Mm. Yeah, so you decided to create this trio, and you didn't go for like the typical jazz trio name, like the trio of someone. You put all your names in it. I've seen two different types of trios. Either it's the name of someone, like a leader, or it's like a total different name, you know, that is very neutral, we could say. So you decided to be in between, let's put it this way. It's not like a neutral like a name, but you decided to put all your first name. So what was
it's
the whole
both a, it's both a neutral name and yeah. All our first names,
because
it's a pun on PSA, public services announcement.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
that's like a well known kind of phrase. So it kind of works both ways.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about it quite a bit. I mean, I was like, PSA is perfect. I'm so glad we didn't go for like SPA and call ourselves SPA. So there it could have gone in a lot of directions.
We make a very different kind of music. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember how we came up with it. It was just one day, right? I, Did I come up with it? I can't recall. I've always liked it though, because it feels unpretentious, and there's something about it that has an organ trio aesthetic to me, if that makes any sense. You know, like spread the word, like wake up, smell the flowers.
Oh, yeah.
PSA, you know, I don't know. It's just snappy. I thought it was a good succinct name, because let's be honest, it is a trope. It's definitely a trope, but it happened to at least have a pun attached to it.
So as you said, this is an organ trio. So this is the kind of music. I don't know if we have to use the word jazz or not. I mean, you can give us your philosophy about that. But Pritesh, you are playing the guitar. Sharik, you are playing the key. And Avery, as we said before, you are the drummer in this band. So there's no bass. Everything is done with the key mainly, right? For the bass side. How did you decide the musical identity of your trio?
Yeah, well, that's something we've been kind of, we started to, I think we had a natural sense of what we were going for just because of maybe some of the music that we all listen to and enjoy. On one hand, you know, when you talk about organ trio, that's something Pritesh and I immediately bonded over. One reason being simply because we were just sitting at the bar and talking, and, you know, it's like he plays guitar and I play piano. But then there's also the question of what can you do together, you know, in a more symbiotic way. And of course, guitar and organ is a long tradition of that kind of thing where they go very well together. And I think you might have even asked me, do you play organ or something like that? And I was like, yes, in fact, I do. He's like, oh, I love organ trios. I'm like, man, let's do it. Let's set something up. So immediately we had that common bond. I think Avery also happens to love that music and, you know, wanted to dig deeper into this kind of, you know, direct, like soulful, groovy way of playing, unpretentious way of playing. So we all kind of have that common understanding and joy for playing organ trio. And then at the same time, you know, we're living in 2020s now. So it's like so much has happened also in other genres, and jazz is, has kind of expanded to include and absorb, as it always has, other styles of music. So, you know, we enjoy more other things from rock to funk to and other bands like Knee Body, or, you know, from even rock and metal, or like even you know, gospel, like just so many other styles of music out there that kind of find its way into our writing. And also, you know, a part of me is like wondering, I think we talked about this after some gigs, like what else can we do? That's, well, I don't want to say that hasn't been done, but you know, the organ trio thing is such a strong thing as well. And I wanted to see if there's something, another spin one can put on it, you know, and other things I can do with. So I'm not strictly playing organ on every track, for example. I'm using two keyboards. I'm using a synth bass sometimes, and a Rhodes in the on the other. So I have like 2-3 keyboards going at the same time. So, I think stylistically we've been drawing from a lot of places, and we talk about it, and I think some of it has been kind of, you'll hear that on the record, that it's not all one thing.
yeah, but that's why I was coming there, because that's actually very interesting. I mean, that's what is interesting with the new scene. I mean, we're going to use the word jazz because it's kind of convenient to have one word to describe a scene, even though it's not the reality of it behind. But the new jazz scene, I would say, in the US, but elsewhere also, is very, like you said, Sharik, you are all like influenced by many genres, many cultures, many stuff, and you are putting everything together. It's more, it's like in the philosophy, it's a little bit like the revival of the jazz fusion we had in the 70s, for example, but now with many more options, I would say. And you are really into that kind of vibe. As you said, there is like some tracks that are more like rock influenced, we can tell. Gospel, obviously, when you are using an organ, especially with a Hammond kind of sound, you always think about this. So yeah, and what was it? Something you really wanted to, because it's very, I would say, happy or fast-paced music. We could just sit and listen to it, but we could also like dance and party on your music. Was it something you had from the start in mind?
I'm so glad you said that, man. That's amazing. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
I did too appreciate.
I think that's a very important part of the organ trio aesthetic, right? I keep using that word, but I think that's a big part of it. It needs to be functional and social music at its core. But I like that you drew this comparison to the 70s to now in terms of the fusion mindset, because everyone has this huge plurality of influences now in the information age, where we're all listening to so many different things all the time, and we're scrolling through people doing all sorts of crazy gimmicks and things on social media. And it's just like all these ideas are swirling around. So I think people experimenting with the form of ensembles has become a really big theme this decade, even as within those ensembles, people will go a lot of different directions. Like there's a lot of great groups now that are just like keyboard and drums duo, or like some people are still really married to the bebop quintet, trumpet and alto saxophone and a rhythm section kind of thing. And some people are going full fusion direction, and it's like three guys with MIDI keyboards and one of them makes sound effects. You know, like there's so many things happening with ensemble setup now that people are putting all these influences into. And I think we just kind of naturally found our way into this organ trio concept because, first of all, we have a keyboardist who can actually do that kind of thing, hold down two parts at once, which is a privilege for me to play with because I've met so many great pianists in my time in Boston and New York. But like that is a really cool, unique skill set. And as a drummer, you know, an independence-minded kind of musician, I can really appreciate that. So it was just something that I think we sort of naturally fell into, and we realized that it was almost like we started making the music before we realized that, oh, this is sort of like an organ trio in a modern sense, you know? So, and that tradition has a lot of weight attached to it in terms of, like you talked about groove and dance music, like that's very important. We can't ignore that side of it. That's really what it's coming from, that devotional aspect, right? So I think we really tried hard to you know, wed these two maybe seemingly disparate ideas of like keeping this really groovy, like unpretentious, we've been saying, type of music with all these different things that we want to try out. And as young people listening to different things, finding our voices. So I think this is a special record for that reason, because that we're really trying to hold those two things together, but there's a lot of exploration and a lot of like fact finding going on about what can we try? What happens when we go in this direction? And so you really get a taste of everything on this album, seven different tracks that are all totally different, really.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that, like if you see, like just in terms of like the organ tradition and just where all the places the organ has been featured, all the way from like Jimmy Smith to like I don't know where, to be honest, what the end is, you know. But you can find organ to be predominantly also heard in like church, very big. So our song Hymn is like more showcasing that aspect, you know. Then you have the older swing aspect, so you listen to the song like Cliff Dunes, which is more of a bluesy, like a, you know, kind of straight ahead swing bluesy kind of vibe, you know. Then you have like a combination, like if you look at the song of like Don't Look Down, it's like you have this modern sound, but as well, we also are walking and swinging at the same time in the bridge. It's like and then at the end, you have this kind of an exploration of like synth bass and electronic stuff. You know, it's like all the elements and stuff are like coming together sometimes in one tune. Sometimes we're exploring just a kind of a genre in like specifically. It's almost like going through like time in terms of like a organ trio, you know? And I don't think that was deliberate, but it came out like this because that's, I mean, consciously or subconsciously, that's how we relate to the music. I mean, right now I can tell you there are many organ trios that are being released, and I'm looking at working with the press companies and all that, and I'm looking at that right now. And I looked at all of them, and all of them are specifically old school, play the melody and improvise organ trio. That's it. Guitar is always clean, amp, always the old school hollow body sound. Organ is we always using like a certain kind of organ sound, which is stays throughout the record, you know. Drums, it doesn't really is like just kind of holding down the time unless it gets a solo in one tune. Like they all have their own places in the song, which has been set years ago. And, you know, and the organ trios, even still now, are kind of following that tradition. But I feel like we kind of went the other direction. So I like that our name, it's a public service announcement, and then you check out the art and you see organ trio. And then I'm pretty sure no one look at that name and says organ trio and checks it out and is like, whoa, they said organ trio, but this is like, we're going through like time. It's not like every other organ trio that is coming out, you know. It's
and not to disparage anyone who wants to.
We have, no, absolutely not. I mean, we're like big fans of swing music. You know, we've all been through like higher educations of in that, and that's jazz and playing swing and bebop or something like that is something close to my heart. When I play and pick up my instrument, that's something I want to play. But I think this record became exploration of what we can do, or as people, as skills that we also have developed, you know. So
I think it came about because, like I said, I don't think we set out to make an organ trio record as a starting point. That was more something we sort of arrived at as a natural progression of the music we were working on together. That was like, it sort of coalesced over time, which I think is cool. Cause again, like we love that music. You know, I was fortunate to study with the great Billy Hart, who was in Jimmy Smith's band for years. And I've always been hearing records like that, you know, big John Patton and people like that. Delvon Lamar right now is one really kind of traditionalist sort of organ trio that I really love. So we love that sound. We wanted to have some of that in there, but it'd be inauthentic for us not to pull all these different things that we've been hearing over the past, you know, 10, 15 years developing our musicianship. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that.
Talking about that, what was the process for the composition and recording? How did you do? Because so you decided the sound you wanted to have. Did you have the time to like compose and then do gigs and then you went for recording? How did you do?
Yeah,
it?
That's pretty much how it happened. We set up some gigs at first together, and each of us brought in compositions. And I know Pritesh was writing specifically, not only for this instrumentation, but for us as musicians, for our personalities too. So he wrote for people as well as the instrument. And I thought that kind of shows in the music, because you kind of think like about the way a person plays, what their affinity is, what their capabilities are, their strengths are, those kind of things. So we would get together for a rehearsal, and each of us came in with tons of fresh music that we just printed out and played it. In fact, we have a lot of music that we haven't recorded because we had too much. And then we played a few gigs together, maybe we played around Boston. And then we, the next thing you know, I mean, I think there was nothing very grand about how we planned it. It was just like, oh, we got a gig. Okay, cool. We'll get another gig. Oh, I got some hours at the studio. Let's just go in and put some stuff down. The hard part was deciding what to record in the limited amount of time. So we said, let's do two compositions from each of us. And that's how we did it.
Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, I think that the two songs of mine that ended up on the album are from complete, like from 5 years apart and from completely different methods of writing. Like the song Don't Look Down, which came out last week, something I wrote in 2018, just kind of as like a jazz standard. And I realized that it would fit really well with these two and their improvisation styles. And and also in the pantheon of songs that we had, I thought it'd be cool to have this tune that Pritesh has a more modern sounding kind of section and then a up-tempo swing sort of thing happening. But then the other song of mine that's on the record is called Dogwood. It's not out yet, but it's just something I made in Ableton, like a short demo, like probably 5 years after I'd written Don't Look Down. And so it's cool. The songs came from very different places and covered a lot of ground. So like Shark said, we had a lot of stuff to choose from, which really helped, and it helped to work things out on gigs and, you know, have it be this sort of thing we would come back to over time. Over what was it, like probably a year or so we were kind of running around Boston playing and such. Yeah
So this is what I was going to ask, because actually, like, the titles of the tracks on the album, they all made sense together. So I was like, okay, so maybe you composed it together, but in fact it didn't, as I can see. Well it was not to fit together.
Yeah. No, I mean, at least for me, I was writing, I think at that time, I remember I was writing for
dude, like,
it was a crazy time.
A dozen bands. Yeah. Pritesh is talking about my work ethic, but the reason I could work so much is because Pritesh had all these bands going.
That's not true at all.
And also Pritesh was composing every day. You know, at that time, I remember, you know, I'd call him up and he'd be like, yeah, I think every day, you know, you'd make yourself a big coffee and just sit down and write for 45 minutes straight. So every day there was like new compositions coming out.
Yeah. I was thinking of it because, you know, I have a Brazilian record that I recorded recently with a string quartet. I was writing that. I had a big band record, which will come out next year sometime. I had my own jazz trio record, but then I was writing for them, and I was also writing for other and arranging for other people. So whenever I write, I feel like I have to write it for not just for what I like, but also for who is playing it, you know? So I literally, there's some music that actually didn't get recorded. There are a few tunes that I wrote that we probably will PSA 2 record or something will be a part of that. But you know, when I'm writing, I know that I have someone who can play left hand bass and keep the chords and all of that very well. So I can provide him something very basic, which will already become very musical instantly, you know. And then at the same time, I know that hits are fun to put in the music because Avery will nail them and it will make them very prominent and give small hits and spaces and leave musical room for drum solos, not like play one riff and continue that and have someone solo over that. But, you know, like have the arc of the song lead to a drum solo, you know. All of these things are like important. Even when I'm writing, like Circle Around is one of my compositions, you know, and Cliff Dunes is one of my compositions, as well as Troxy Fought is one of my compositions. And they're all exploring different things. One came from a knee body aspect, which I thought was like something that Avery would really shine on as like a drum part. And it's weird how many people, drummers, have hit me up and been like, wow, that's how did you record that? What did you use? What does this sound like? You know, people, I got the response I was looking for. They were all like, this sounds like a fresh knee body, Ben Wendell / modern sound. And I was like, yes, exactly. And then, you know, we released the Troxy Fod, and they were like, oh, this is like old school fusion, but still modern with like synth bass kind of sound going on at the same time. And then this electric guitar. And then if you listen to Cliff Dunes, you'll go like, oh, this is like straight ahead bluesy, like Oregon Trio tradition. So if you separate all the tunes and you just listen to one tune, you cannot expect what the other tune is going to be like. You know, if you just listen to Cliff Dunes, you'll be like, oh, this is going to be another swinging, probably a bebop jazz record. But nope. If you listen to Circle Around, you're going to be like, oh, this is going to be like a full rock and roll modern kind of sound. Nope. You know, it's all the territories.
I like to think of it as just as different kind of landscapes of the same people, the same three personalities. But
this is because, as you said, you had many composition and some are waiting maybe for a second album. So was it the way you picked the song? You were like, okay, so we're gonna.
I think so. I think we were quite deliberate about picking the songs because we wanted to represent these different sides and have it be complement each other. Yeah, that's what I think. We wanted each of the tunes to complement each other and to provide enough variety and interest across the and tell a story through the album.
Various sections of the PSA newspaper, you know.
Yeah, yes, that's what I was going to say. Is it a way to present the whole landscape of what you were able as a trio and maybe, you know, to as a like a foundation for the rest?
I feel like we staked our claim on that now. It's risky, right? Because, there's a reason people make records that are stylistically consistent and going for a really specific thing. And I notice this a lot, especially when I'm trying to learn music from records I like. I'm always noticing, oh, they use this harmonic motif in this other song. And, you know, I really respect the deeper level of, like, threading specific things through a record. So we kind of took this different direction, said we're gonna just put all the stuff in here in the gumbo and like see what comes out. But I'm glad that we went this way because I think we get to touch on a lot of different bases, and hopefully people aren't disappointed when they put on Circle Around and then they put on one of the other tunes for the record and it doesn't sound the same. I hope they're pleased, but it's definitely something to think about for the records going forward.
Involved in education also because as you said, Sharik, you were supposed to go back to Berkeley where you teach and you are all like teaching. I could see that on the website. What does it mean to you, like teaching?
Well, teaching for me is an integral, it's just both sides of the same coin. As a musician, you're always it's just like a constant investigation and study, which is just like a limitless kind of mine of just great things to learn. So I feel like that's something, you know, you're always this, I know it's a cliche, but you're always a student, but it's always exciting to make the discovery process. And I find it personally very exciting to share that with other people, or to kind of do that, engage in that process together, and to find ways to explore and to go on that journey together. And then it helps me just in my own approach in studying. So that's kind of, it all goes hand in hand for me, the exploration, teaching, creativity.
Yeah, well said. I think that, you know, I had a teacher when I was in middle school, really great guy. I'm from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And he was always talking about acts of service and the way being able to serve other people is really important, just on a spiritual level, you know. And music is like, it can be this wonderful thing that unites people from all over the world and blah, blah, blah. But then, like the 20 years before that, it's a very insular practice of like, you're sitting there trying to get it together, find your sound, and you're working on stuff and no one really knows you except your friends. And, you know, it can be very isolating too, especially in like a creative music kind of niche. So I think teaching is just a really great way to make sure that you're giving back to people and having like a kind of a feedback loop of like, I'm working on things, I have my identity and stuff, but I'm also reinvesting in the larger concept of just music as, you know, a tool to bring people together and a tool for people's self-improvement. You know, I teach a lot of kids, so I think it's really beautiful what it can do for children in terms of like developing brains, making all these connections, making these kinetic, tangible relationships to like things in the abstract, these sounds.
Avery, you know, also teaches math.
Yeah. So just as a quick aside, yeah, as good as Avery is at music and drums, he's equally good at mathematics, he teaches math at a professional level.
I am a math teacher now. I actually had the snow day off today, lucky. But yeah, teaching is a big part of my life, and you know, I think a lot of musicians who teach, maybe some of them, sometimes I would like to be doing more performing and stuff, but it's all part of the process, you know, it's really important to share what you know and to reinvest in people and to make it not such a isolated practice when you're working in a creative field, I think. So that's important to me for sure.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, teaching for me, but the motive for teaching for me was like, is different. I love the aspect of like presenting something to someone, a perspective that they haven't seen before, and then seeing their face blown away by something that they're like, wow, this is also possible. I mean, it's almost like it's like a gift you just gave to them, and they feel like, wow, there's a world to explore in it. And that, as a teacher, feels amazing to me.
It's the best, because we remember those moments. We remember those moments in our own journeys too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't matter if I'm teaching a 5-year-old or you know, I have students that are 55 and 60 years old too, that, you know, or if I'm teaching in college or wherever I might be teaching, but you still get the same response if someone is interested in something and you give them a new perspective of something they know, and you add just a tiny bit extra to their to what they already know, they get blown away by it, you know. And I love it, because for me teaching is more like something I can give, because I started playing the guitar very late. I started at like 14, which is actually late for most professional musicians, you know. I mean, all of my friends, when I came to America from India, you know, and I went to music schools, all of my friends were like, yeah, I was playing in high school, I was playing in middle school, I was playing before that, and then I was in a jazz band, and I had this teacher, and I had that teacher, and I did. And I had none of that. From 14, I was like, my teacher was YouTube and blogs and reading, you know, books. So I had none of that availability until I actually, at the age of 18 or 19, when I actually moved to America and started like learning, you know, about it and getting, you know. So to be honest, I was like way behind most of my fellow musicians in terms of what they had already accomplished on day one and being in a music school, you know. So teaching for me comes from the place of like, wow, I didn't really have that in me. So I want to give it as much as I can because I know how it feels to be on the other side of this, you know. So.
Okay, I understand. It's a way to be able to give them what you had to work, maybe I wouldn't say harder because you need to work hard when you are at school, but I mean, by yourself, at least before.
Yeah, thanks for that question. That's so many professional musicians are teaching all the time, you know, and don't really talk about that aspect of their lives so much. Thanks for that question.
Yeah, I mean, you're welcome. That's very interesting. Also, like you said, Pritesh, you were from India. You moved to the US before that, and Sharik, you did the same. And I don't know, Sharik, I think you also studied Indian music, classical music, right?
Yeah, I did. I studied. I played the sitar as well.
Ah, yeah. How is this an influence? You had the possibility to blend in the composition of the trio, or is it for later on?
Yeah, I mean that's a very profound question that I've been kind of asking and trying to deal with for years now, you know, as because you go through so many different phases. First of all, you come from India and you played some Indian classical music, but then eventually I stuck with the piano and I didn't stick with the sitar, and then I went into jazz, and then at some point, you know, people are like, oh, you're from India, so do you play Indian classical music? It's like automatic question. And then I'm like, no, why? And then I went to the extreme of saying like, no, because I wanted to be recognized as a jazz musician and to be and to be appreciated for that, and not kind of stereotyped or whatever. But then at some point, you know, as you evolve and mature a little bit, and you're in New York where everybody is, first of all, everybody is good. So whereas in a lot of other places, you might, being good would be enough actually, because you would be already among a very rare group of people if you're just by being at a certain level. But I guess over here, I felt like being good is not the objective anymore because that's the default. So then it's more about what do you have to say? You've got the craft, but what can you say that is you or that speaks about your story, your identity? And so I think around that time is when I started trying to dig a little bit into my influences, and then also to not deny my influences. Like, yes, I did play Indian classical music. Yes, I enjoy Indian classical music. Like, why do I have to deny that? And then, of course, the long process of trying to integrate that in some ways into my composition and writing, sometimes artificially. And then I would be like, well, is this too artificial? And then sometimes, is it going to happen naturally? So all these different states of mind. And I have been composing a lot with this, and I think it does come out probably in more subconscious ways now in my playing, and I think it in that sense finds its way into the sound of our playing and in the sound of the trio on a more subconscious level. I don't think I explicitly said I'm going to sit down and write some Indian classical type of thing for this trio, although I have done it in other contexts.
I asked you this question because we were talking about improvised music in a general sense, not just jazz, but improvised music. Now, more and more persons, musicians that actually have, it could be like they studied maybe classical Indian music or something else. Like they have something more than the typical jazz musician. Now they are bringing it into the mix. And I think it's very interesting. For example, like for someone that is actually very known, but Anushka Shankar, what she's doing, it's in between. I think it's very interesting. But also in the US, there is this girl that actually played the sitar, but she's mixing it with like synths, like Moog modulars or stuff like that. And so the name is, what's her name again? There is the modular princess. She's I think she's mixing Indian classical music with modular synths. And there is another one I cannot remember, but she did a video for Moog. There is actually a very cool, there is a very cool video where she's actually like, I think it's an electric sitar and she's looping the signal into different synths and stuff. And it's actually very interesting. And that's why I was asking, because you were talking about different influences and how you mix everything. And when you have like a strong musical cultural background, it can be also interesting. That's why I asked you. And I also understand what you said about not like you moved to the US, you don't want to like to fit into a stereotype also.
I wonder if I feel like Indian classical music is I don't want to say it's like very guarded, but it is like revered and it's not maybe as globalized as like some other folk musics have become. So I wonder if there's some like weight around like when you like put a sitar on a jazz fusion track, are people going to be, are their feathers going to be ruffled by that? I don't know.
I mean, some people, but that's something that's done a lot. And a lot of Indian musicians are doing it. So it's, there's a certainly like no shortage of attempts at fusion, putting a sitar with some distortion and, you know, rock, drama and stuff like that happens all the time. But there are also purists, certainly purists who are very much into keeping classical music as pure and classical. And there's an obsession with purity in India, you know, it's about keeping things also very, you know. So there's you have both communities. And in fact, the revered Zakir Hussain, who's, you know, it's everybody knows this guy's a genius, but even he was had to leave India because what he was doing was a bit too experimental, you know,
with Shakti and that kind of thing,
and not even that, just the way he played even a pure classical music.
Wow.
He would sometimes add something to the discourse. He'd be like, what if I did this? And people be like, oh no, that's not how it's, you know, something.
Wow,
like
that's so fascinating.
So it's a bit stifling, in fact. It can be
I mean, I can honestly, sorry, I was saying, I can honestly say that, you know, learning Indian classical is being in India is a part of like your school curricular. Like it's like, I mean, you can choose to in music and dance and many other things, but if you go the music direction, at least in my school and a lot of schools where I come from, it was a very common direction to go towards. But fortunately or unfortunately for me, my Indian classical music teacher kicked me out of the class because I learned Metallica, and I showed up with learning the first a riff to Metallica or something, and instantly he was like, "You are out," which was the worst and the best thing, because he was like, "You're out," and I was like, "Okay," and I took my guitar and I used that time to practice AC/DC and Metallica and the bands I was listening to on this small, actually I had like a I don't know if they even exist anymore, like you can put the disc in and you know, like the, I used to like put, yeah, the Walkmans, you know, and that's what I had for you know, until like I was, I think 17, that I got like a real, like a iTouch or something, 16 or something.
But you know, we were talking about fusion. I had the opportunity, I think it was maybe 10 years ago, to see Pharoah Sanders playing with a tabla player. And they were doing something together in Paris. It was amazing, actually. It was like very fused kind of music, but super cool.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have been amazing, and it would have probably lent itself well. I think Pharoah Sanders' music has always had this sense openness, a kind of openness to it, and you know, there's a spiritual element to it, to the way he plays, and of course Indian classical music also has that as well.
And when you mention Pharoah, I think, I don't know the project you're talking about, but I think about that gorgeous record he did with the producer Floating Points. You guys know that album?
Oh yeah.
Hugely orchestrated. Yeah, amazing. I'm glad you brought him up, because I mean, I remember listening to Karma just in the woods walking my dog, getting my mind blown at like 15 years old, you know.
It's insane, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
what are your main inspiration and influences?
Ooh, the hardest question to ask any musician.
I mean, you need to pick. I mean,
well, as a trio, I mean, like in terms of our group, you know, some of the people we've talked about at the beginning, of course, we're like Jimmy Smith and, you know, that canon of a great organ trio players. And then in the more modern side, you know, people like we were talking about Kneebody and Aaron Parks, Little Big, Brad Meldow. And, you know, and then I was kind of on a personal level thinking about, or maybe even on a subconscious level, thinking about Brad Meldow's work with Mark Juliana, where he's playing synths and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, feel free to chime in with other influences that you think we have.
Yeah. I mean, drummers, let's say, you know, for the older school sounds, one of my favorite organ trio drummers is Grady Tate. If you listen to that Jimmy Smith, Wes Montgomery record, the dynamic duo, Grady Tate. I had a teacher in high school that had me transcribe some of that. Also, Billy Higgins. Also, Billy Hart. And then for some of the more modern parts of the sound, you know, Dennis Chambers, maybe. Or Eric Harland, Nate, certainly.
Or Nate Smith. Or Nate Wood, you know.
Or Nate Wood, yeah. All the Nates. Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on. I love so many great drummers. But especially with this record, yeah, the groove stuff is coming from definitely people like Nate Wood or Eric Harland or Dennis Chambers. I don't know why I'm thinking of Dennis Chambers today. I'm thinking of this record he did called Outbreak in the 90s, which basically I had like a smooth jazz Pandora station that would also play me some fusion stuff when I was in middle school. That was just my bag.
Too.
Right? You know, like later. Dave Weckl Band and like Yellow Jackets. I guess that's not smooth, you know, but it was smoother taste. And also, but yeah, so Will Kennedy from the Yellow Jackets, another amazing drummer. But yeah, Dennis Chambers for sure. I think about, like when I think about a tune like Circle Around or like the outro on Don't Look Down. He's the fountain of a lot of great drummers today, like, you know, Mason Guidry, and I might be saying his name right, or Mike Mitchell, people like that, super chops monsters. I'm not on that tier, but, you know, when I want to do stuff like that, I definitely think about someone like Dennis Chambers or, you know, Aaron Spears, who we lost this year. We could go on and on, but how about a guitar, Pritesh?
Oh, man, I don't know, but, I mean, it seems like every time I put out anything, everyone keeps saying that you sound like Kurt Rosenwinkel, and I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm sure that's a big influence in me that subconsciously probably comes out. There are tunes in the record where I'm trying my best to sound like John Scofield sometimes a little bit, but you know, or I have like, you know, like the swinging tunes. I want to sound like, you know, more like George Benson, but that's like a very stylistic to the organ trio sound, actually, because of some of the work with Jimmy Smith that he did. But, you know, it's weird because when I was at Berkeley for 3 years, I played in an organ lab called Organ Lab 1, Organ Lab 2, both of them. So I played like, I don't know, maybe 400 or 500 different songs. I mean, there weren't 400 or 500 in the that were covered in the class, but I had the charts for almost that much amount of music that I would just go home and play and like play it with different organ players in class. And I was a part of the rhythm section and being the guitar player, so I was listening to all of those records, you know. And that's a very specific sound. So I think I was trying a little bit of that in the record, but I think my style is like kind of I would call it confused, because I've transcribed more saxophone and piano than I have transcribed guitar, to be honest, in my life. So it's hard to say.
But, I was going to say that somebody that's kind of opened it up on the more modern side of organ playing for me is somebody like Sam Yehel, you know, is a little more kind of more restrained way of playing, not necessarily emphasizing this, you know, like, you know, it does groove, but there's also it's just open, it's a little more open and a little where the organ can take on a more restrained or more subtle approach that I found quite interesting, as opposed to this, you know, bombastic, like driving thing that the organ can also do, because the organ can be a very loud instrument. And then also Sam's work with Josh Redman, Elastic Band, you know, that I'm sure you've, you know, checked out some of those, that period of Josh Redman's career when he was doing stuff with Brian Blade and Samuel, you know, and playing organ and bass, where kind of groovy and they kind of encapsulated all these influences of funk and stuff in their music. And then in the organ tradition has also this whole gospel side, which has really come together, I think, in recent times, thanks to YouTube. Because of course, if you've grown up in a black church in America, you're no stranger to seeing amazing tradition of gospel players in playing in any church here in Brooklyn, for example. But we didn't really have access to that because they weren't like putting out a lot of records. But now YouTube, you know, everything's on there, so you can hear, go and check out all this stuff. So a lot of modern organ players also now have this whole palette of way of playing, like really churchy gospel stuff. And of course, you know, you see that with bands like Snarky Puppy or something, like Corey Henry, and you know, these kind
Sean
of
Martin,
things
yeah,
happening.
All those guys.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's, yeah, there's that. And then as you mentioned, there's the fusion stuff that we dig. Like I think as a bass, I mean, I'm playing bass, so I'm checking out, you know, Jaco Pastorius and Joe Zawinul and that kind of stuff, because that's very interesting to me.
There's some drummers from that era that are super influential on me too, especially in how I was trying to come up with like hip drum parts for this record, but especially like Mike Clark, Harvey Mason, David Garibaldi, you know, Zigaboo Modalist, like cats like that. New Orleans influence. There's definitely some New Orleans influence on these tracks. I'm a Southerner. I'm not from that far south, although my mom is from the deep south. But I try to have a little bit of that, like on our song Onward, you know.
Yeah. In a world without any limitation, what would you like to do with the band? What would be your biggest like dream or achievement with this trio?
You know, this is a great like everyday sort of band. I wish that we lived closer together so that we could play more. That's really it. I like this trio. Like, we've all had a lot going on in our lives this past year. I mean, Pritesh has been working like crazy promoting, and I mean, he's just been invaluable. Shark is in two different cities at once, teaching at Berkeley. I'm here in New York doing various projects. I got my math teaching gig, you know, I've got all these things going on. So it'd be nice. I mean, this modern world has gotten so complicated and so convoluted, and there's so many balls in the air that we're juggling all the time. So it'd be great if we had more time to just focus on the music without worrying about, are we going to book this? Are we going to record this? Are we going to promote this? You know, it'd be great if we had more time to do that. But, you know, that's adulthood and musician life, and we'll get back to that place.
I feel like when, you know, we're grinding away and all that, but it all starts to feel worth it when you're like, you know, you're playing every night. You're on tour. You're traveling, and you're playing your own music, and people are coming and listening to you playing your own original music, and you're getting paid for it. but you're having the most fun time playing this. And I think when you get to that point where things are just kind of rolling, and you're able to be in the music, then you're like, ah, okay, that's why I did all this 6 months of emailing and you know, grinding away. This is why I did it. Yeah, it kind of makes sense. So I think that's kind of the, I feel like one of the best outcomes is if we can just play our music and tour with it and keep recording and composing. Yeah.
I mean, same for me. I wish we were, you know, the only reason that we kind of, I wouldn't say stopped, but like we still have a lot of music to record, but it would have kept growing if we had kept being close to each other and playing, you know, because the more we kept playing, the more we got ideas about each other and the more we understood each other on a personal and a musical level. So, I mean, booking gigs is one thing, and playing live is one thing, and playing in a studio is one thing. But for me, as someone who's composing for this trio, for me, I wish there was an ideal world where we could just transport into one place and be at one place and just play as much as we can, you know, because every time we played, man, I went home and I was like, wow, I should write something on this aspect of this thing that I heard today, you know, everything. I would really sit and think about it, you know, and I'm a traditionalist in the way I write. I mean, I could show you, I literally go, it's like crumpled up. I was like writing something last night, you know, and I start with like very like notes on a paper, you know, kind of guy, you know, on piano or something or guitar, you know, because I have to, and I have like bags of manuscript paper around me because I'm always like, I get an idea, I have to put it down somewhere, you know, and I'm that kind of guy, or record it on a voice note instantly, and then go and do something about it. So ideally I would wish to be able to play all the time with the band, because not only is it fun and it's like it feels good and personable with the connection level is so high, but also it gives new ideas. I feel pushed every time, you know, as a player. So I'm looking forward to being on road with this band, you know. So we're all growing together in this aspect, and the music is also kind of growing at the same time.
Nice. You know? Thank you very much, guys. So I hope your wishes are going to be are going to happen at some point. I wish you the best, and I hope you're gonna have like the time you want and you need to nourish this band. Congrats on your album; it's actually amazing. And we talked about this, but I mean, we need, I think, more and more groups like you that are blending tradition with modern influences, and where this music, even though it can be intellectual, this is also something you can just feel without like asking yourself too much question. So thank you for that. Congrats on this album. And yeah, I hope we're going to have the opportunity to see you in Europe, because I'm in Europe. So we talked about the US. Obviously, it's easier for you, but I hope I'm going to have the opportunity to see you live. Thank you for listening to Jazz Exploration. If you want to know more about the podcast, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Do not forget to subscribe, leave a comment and share. See you soon. I'm leaving you with Troxifot by PSA Trio.